Welcome aboard, you people. It is a Starship Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis. Off for another day of broadcast. And so let's explain where everybody is. Here you got Judy in the newsroom covering all the things that are worth covering.
She's turned her frown
like
upside
the Cubs.
Down.
Right, like the Cubs. You got Violetta concerning herself in the traffic center with all the things that are important, like Cubs traffic.
Like the Cubs, yeah.
Right, exactly. And we have our own Kevin Powell, who is actually at Wrigley Field right now for what may be the end of this game or may not be the end of this game. I can't say for sure, but I can tell you. Are you okay, Kev?
Probably. Yeah. Hey, bro. Yeah, the Cubs have held at least a share of the division lead since Friday, July 13th. But it looks like on day 163, the division slipped through their fingers, and the Brewers are the NL Central champions, beating the Cubs 3-1 here at Wrigley today.
So
it's a crazy game.
It was a crazy game. Rizzo up in the bottom of the ninth, and then he's already had one home run, and then makes the third out by a gigantic shot out to right field.
Yeah, just missed another one. He had taken Hader, that's that lefty the Brewers have, who's just nasty out of the bullpen. He's homered off of before, and Rizzo had a huge homer earlier, but just comes up a little bit short, about 10 feet in front of the warning track, and right, and the Brewers are celebrating right now at Wrigley Field, and Cubs fans are filing out. So the good news is the season's not over. They got another game tomorrow night here at Wrigley. In the NL wild card, they await the winner of Dodgers-Rockies, which is set to begin a little bit later today.
So this was the tiebreaker, right, to settle the NLC, the division champs?
Yeah, so this was a winner takes the division. So, like I said, the good news is the season's not over. But, man, I think it stings a little bit when you have at least a share of first place all the way since July 13th, and then on day 163, you let it get away. But like I said, the season's still alive. It will play either the Rockies or Dodgers tomorrow here at Wrigley. If they win that game, then they would go and play the Brewers in Milwaukee beginning Thursday. So still a lot to sort out for the playoffs.
Wow.
How about it?
That is a lot to sort out. I mean, this team has been so good. You know, the best team in the National League for about half the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's in terms of numbers of games. And yet they can't win the National League Central. They do not win the National League Central, as it turns out, because I mean Milwaukee's been playing lights out. They're insane. It has been crazy.
Yeah.
They've had a great August into September, and all of September they've been basically unstoppable. You got to give them a ton of credit. But
they probably got the MVP on their team in Christian Yelich. He's looked like Babe Ruth the past month. I mean, he's just been incredible. So they've got a good recipe, the Brewers, right now. Good pitching, good defense, and a couple of their key players have gotten hot at the right time. So, you know, for the Cubs, all things considered, the injuries, a lot of guys probably not performing to where we thought they would be this year. All things considered, look, they had a chance to win the Central. You know, you Darvish, you got nothing from him. Tyler Chatwood, you got nothing from him. You don't have your closer, Brandon Morrow, or Pedro Strop right now. So give them credit. I mean, they still fought and somehow finished with, you know, one of the best records in all of baseball. So, but, you know, to me, these are clearly the two best teams in the National League. It's unfortunate they can't meet in the NLCS. But, man, if the Cubs win tomorrow, expect an intense NLDS between the Cubs and Brewers. But these, in my opinion, are the two best teams in the National League.
Right, because if they do win tomorrow, they will be the Brewers at, and they will have home field advantage up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it'll be in Milwaukee because Milwaukee won the division. So
right.
Cubs win tomorrow night here at Wrigley because they will host the wild card game. Then they would play at Milwaukee beginning Thursday for the start of the NLDS.
Right.
Pretty tricky.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. And it's interesting that the Dodgers, you know, the other preeminent National League team of this era, has been, you know, is also finds itself in the wild card. So,
in a
situation like it may be in the wild card. Like, you know, they find themselves in the exact. It is amazing that in two of the divisions in the National League, it was not decided after 162 games. They had to go to a one-game playoff.
It's unbelievable. It's great for baseball, in my opinion. I mean, this is awesome. I know it's come out on the losing end today, but this is some high-intense stuff. And it's going to be intense at Dodger Stadium later today, too. So, yeah, I mean, we don't normally see tiebreakers, and it just happens to be one of those years where, you know, two two divisions come down to day 163. But, bro, I remember, you know, Steve Stone, we had on last week, said he thinks the NL is pretty much wide open and anybody who gets in can win. And I completely agree with him. I think the National League postseason is going to be completely wild because I don't think there's a clear favorite in the National League. I do think the Cubs and Brewers are the best, but I think it's going to be a fun October in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's just hope that the Cubs are past October 2nd in baseball. That is my most fervent hope right now, because that's the part that kind of freaks me out, man. Freaks me out kind of big. All right.
Yeah.
But at least we got the Bears. Bears going to the Super Bowl.
Totally.
Oh, you got to see. Yesterday at Soldier Field, there were people like, you know, all right, well, I got to go. Atlanta, right? I'm buying my tickets down to Atlanta.
People did. They jumped on the websites and started booking hotels. It's like a little premature, but the excitement, enthusiasm, you can understand.
Well, we'll talk about that later. Ed Obradovich will be here. Are you coming back for that?
Yeah, we're gonna talk to Madden and talk to the players real quick, and then I'm flying over there. So I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Okay,
bye.
Kev.
Right. Goodbye, Kev. Goodbye, Kev. We send our little Kev out all over the place.
He's not taking the day off?
No. He doesn't get the whole day off.
Oh.
Just to get back here.
You have the worst work ethic.
Maybe if they won.
She would like to take the day off right now. I'd like to go to the party. They're not having a party. I'd like to go to the party. When are they having a party? Hey, how did that disco ball work out for them in that little room of theirs?
Oh, the party room.
Yeah.
For the Cubs. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not feeling good about the disco ball in the party room. It seemed to make a lot of sense after they won the World Series. Like, hey, look at this. We're going to have a disco ball in our party room. And we're like, yay, they got a disco ball. They're going to win now forever.
They're not using it today. Maybe tomorrow.
This has been, it should be noted, the greatest four-year run by the Chicago Cubs in the history of the organization.
Isn't that something?
At no other point in Cubs history, whether it was Whalers or Cubs history, were they as dominant as they have been for the past 5 years, essentially.
Yeah, it's been exciting to watch.
Pretty great,
be a fan.
Right? Or 4 years. So there you go.
Yeah, but I want them to win.
Okay. All right. Okay. And how are you helping in that respect? Where's the disco ball? I want to go to the party. Although, I'm not going to say that she wouldn't help at the party, because she's very helpful at a party.
She is very good. Thank you. You're welcome. At your party.
All right. Why don't we check in with Judy, find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Chewy says thanks, but he's already running.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Matera, and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Anybody freak out, but I have a little problem with my Ben button right now.
Oh, your Ben button isn't connecting to the Ben?
No, my
it's a problem.
My Ben button it says it's locked and it refuses to allow me to get to my Benjamin. Ben, just wave for the people on the CLTV so you can see
you're
that
awesome,
they're
Ben.
Hearing us. And then can you?
That's a good parade wave you've got. I mean, that's practice. That takes some time to develop. It's not just a hey, hi. More of a full hello everybody.
Yeah,
people, very friendly.
People are
kind of a wave.
People love Ben. I can talk about Ben now that he can't talk to us for a moment. I just want to watch him react. And that is that Ben, I ran into Ben earlier today. Ben, just nod if that's true. Yes,
he
I ran
yes,
into Ben.
He
yeah.
confirms that
happened. And then Ben was in our building and he was going to there's a subterranean barbershop like style center that people really seem
he
to like.
He goes there? The one here in the Pedway?
Yes. Oh, hey, you found the Ben button.
We got the Ben button going, yes.
Yes. Yes, Mark Sapelsa originally introduced me to him. Now your friend Joe Donlin and I are among his customers. And yes, indeed, you run into the oddest folks on lower Wacker Drive, and that's where I ran into Roe today.
Yes. And actually, Ben cut me off on lower Wacker Drive.
True.
And then he pulled up in front of my car, and he gives me the finger, and I'm like, who the fuck is that guy? And then I look at him, and I go, and he rolls down the window. I'm like, all right, I'm going to be shot. It's lower Wacker Drive.
Yeah,
guy in
careful.
An SUV, right, with blacked out windows and gigantic. And Ben's got those spinners on his wheels, so it's sort of like.
Don't forget the neon underlighting.
And I'm like, sure. This is not going to go well. So he lowers the window, and I'm like, and I'm putting my affairs in order in my head. You know, what am I going to do?
Well, even the guys who transact business there on Lower Wacker were scattering.
Oh yeah,
right. They knew this was going to go
business.
South.
Yeah, and then
serious.
He lowers the window, and then he gives me the bird.
Careful.
Yeah,
oh, really?
And then I'm like. Oh, hey.
We call that the Rahm Emanuel salute.
Yes.
He does it so the rest of us can, too.
While he's mayor, I think it is good. Yeah. You know, you could still do that.
I like when he does it with his half finger. That's my favorite, when he does it like that.
He gave it to us once with both hands at once, and it was technically a one-and-a-half bird.
to the media? He did that?
He was joking. Oh. He was smiling
when
he did it.
It was a nice middle finger up.
Yeah.
Kind of
he knows it gets
kind of an endearing.
Yeah, he's a good middle finger guy.
So anyway, back to a couple of guys on Lower Wacker.
So then I'm like, you know, I'm going to like get out and fight, you know, because that's what I do. I'm like trying to find where the reverse is in my car. I can't quite figure it out.
Fighting at all.
And it's Ben. And I'm like, oh, Ben. So then we.
How did his hair look? Oh, this was pre hair.
This was
pre hair. So he parked, and then I parked, and then we walked through the little pedway thing to get to the hair cutting area.
Sweet.
And he introduces me to his haircut guy, who told two or three inappropriate jokes all the
time. Within about
row.
8 seconds of. I literally said, hey, Frank, I'd like you to meet Roe, Frank. He goes, hey, Roe. He's like a 60-year-old Italian guy.
Uh-huh.
Like, Roe. If you hear the story about that, I'm like, whoa. Supreme Court justices are like falling left and right. Let's not make this joke in a public place. This isn't, Frank, I don't know about your career as a barber, but this is definitely not going to be good for Roe and my career.
Hey, you are telling me, what is it? This one thing that the man have good for you? And I'm like, what? Is it what? No. You should tell me, what is it? The one? I don't know. Well, you tell me, what is it? The one thing that the man have that is not good for you?
Oh,
and I'm like, I don't know.
I don't want to step into this one.
Yeah, and then I'm up at that point. I'm like, I'm just trying to walk. You know, I'm trying to moonwalk back out of the thing. I'm like, all right, I gotta go.
Like three people in there, are like, oh, Rokan, I loved you during the O.J. Simpson trial. Can
right,
you take a picture.
Right, that is so funny because from 20 years ago, that is you always love when people go, oh, I used to listen to you. Anyway, they they're like in a cave down.
That's
in
a
like,
time machine.
That is. They're like those people
they only
never.
Get AM radio down there. That's your prime demographic.
No, you're right. We do go down there in the subterranean level. We're very popular down there.
Yeah. It's like when the Planet of the Apes. Remember when they find it? It's New York. He's in the New York subway, like the return to the planet, whatever that is. The escape from the Planet of the Apes, whatever. And then the guy's living in the subway in New York. That's what it's like down there.
It really is.
Right. And there's a bunch of people who have shaved heads, and they're praying to a nuclear weapon.
Sure. The styles haven't changed much in decades.
Yeah. Same deal.
But is he going to get a hold of your hair now, Robert?
No.
You're not doing that.
No,
not going for the.
No, I got a whole staff. Besides, I can't. Honest to God, half the things he said to me, I can't.
Well,
I can't have that happen.
I will say, when Sapelsa originally said, "Ben, you know, you should go to my barber. Yeah, I want to introduce you." In I said, "I don't know, Mark." And Mark says, "Well, you know, he used to cut Harry Carey's house, Harry Jack Brick house. He does Grant DePorter." I go, Ro, I said, Mark, two of the three guys you named are dead. This is not a good sales pitch.
But they didn't die of their
hair. Your hair looks great, though, Ben. That's the most important.
You got it. Yeah, it's looking
good.
Yeah,
you did a nice job
today.
Thank you very much.
Ben, now let me ask you a question.
So he shares your humor, Ben. I think
when you are having the pain down there,
you're like, what? Oh. I don't want to talk about this.
He just lets it go.
Yeah.
You know what Rush Street was like? Like, let me tell you, Rush Street.
Yeah. I'm sure.
1979. That was a good year for me.
Yeah.
Does he dish on the others who sat there, like the Harry Careys of the world and the Jack Brickhouses?
You know, he doesn't tell anyone else's secrets, but he tells a lot of stories that with no names attached.
Mm.
But you can figure it out. There once was a guy. He was a let's call him a Larry O'Berry, and he was a
loved baseball.
He was with the Cubs and the Sox.
He also drank a lot of Bud.
Yes. And anyway, I don't want to say who he is, but they will say this. You know, like, all right.
We know what you're talking about.
I had to walk past there going the other way after I dropped Ben off at his.
Uh-huh.
I put Ben on the little horse so he could, you know, get his hair cut.
Yes.
And then I had to walk back past after going over and working and then coming back. And I'm walking past and I'm like scurrying past. I'm looking to see if they're like which way they're looking, making
don't
sure they don't see me.
He did not
like,
say
I gotta
hello
go
on the way back.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
Ah, this is very nice.
The tough part is every part of this story is true.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now, a couple things. First of all, the Van Dyke trial off for today.
Off for today. Because, he has a sick juror.
But right. Did you guys think this morning when it was all cryptic, when he first offered no explanation, the judge, for the delay, a lot of people were like, wait a minute, is this Cubs related? Or some of the jurors going to be at the Cubs game or something
like
that?
Well, we didn't know what
was
going on.
It was
and
weird.
The judge was so cryptic about it that you immediately assume the worst. And it's just a sick juror, and they will be back at it tomorrow,
which is all good. We hope the juror feels better and is back tomorrow. But it is, it wasn't anything that was monumental here.
No, right. And you didn't know, and your mind went in weird directions when you first heard that.
Right. So here's basically what we understand about the schedule for the remainder of the week. The prosecution has rested. The defense has been having their case in chief for the last week. They will. It looks like there may be one more day of testimony.
I think the defense has lined up two expert witnesses to testify, both about use of force and also about the stress involved in police work. But we're coming down to this decision time for whether or not Jason Van Dyke himself takes the stand.
Right. So we would know in the next day or two if that were to happen, because they would be, assuming they have court tomorrow, it would either be tomorrow or Wednesday.
Right.
What is the defense saying about that at this time? I imagine they're leaving it entirely open, but do you get any sort of signals from them at all about how likely
it'll be? We haven't gotten much in the way of signals from them. Typically, there's a witness list that comes out, and that's your kind of first sense of who's going to get called and what the timeline is. But, yeah, the defense is showing signs that it's wrapping up, and you can better believe that they're in in-depth discussions now about the liability, but also the message it would send, both if they put Jason Van Dyke on the stand or if they don't.
Mm-hmm. Right. And every defense attorney I've talked to says, oh, they're never going to put him on. They're never going to put him on. And whenever it's like betting, when everybody goes one way, go the other. When it's going one way, you just don't know. I mean, looking at this case as we've been watching it, I wouldn't be surprised.
Those same legal prognosticators also said, no way, it'll be a jury trial.
Right. Yeah. Mm,
true.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's over the next couple of days. But so we'll be wrapping up, and the jury may well get this by the end of the week.
Yep. Right. And speaking of police work, if I could just take a moment to tell you about a story that we're working on tonight at 9 o'clock. Ro, I know you know, and Anna, over the summer there were three Chicago police officers who took their own lives in less than 3 months. So
yeah.
It's caused us to take another look at the mental health needs of police officers, the stress they're under. We spent some time with a really remarkable officer who watched a fellow police officer, went through training with this lady, and then she took her own life very unexpectedly. He talks about the emotional toll not only that took, but then himself being called out on a suicide call just a few weeks later. And he was so moved by it that he then, in his own time, went and got a degree in counseling. And in his off time, he has a practice that counsels first responders in dealing with the emotional trauma that they see day in and day out on the job. We're also going to look at just how well the department is meeting the needs of its officers when it comes to emotional health. There was a Justice Department investigation that you guys know about from a year or so ago that found in 2015 the department just had three clinicians treating 13,500 personnel on the department. Three people to treat 13,500.
Well, unbelievable.
Seems crazy.
Their caseload was like 2,499 calls per clinician, if you do the math on it.
Yeah, and then anecdotally, you've heard from police, as well as all three of us have, that some of them are afraid to make certain admissions to
certainly
mental health
we
professionals
get into that tonight.
For a lot of reasons.
Yep.
I've been watching your report for that.
Especially in a situation like this, because then there's a record. If something goes, they have to use deadly force, or they get involved in any kind of situation that's going to require a further legal scrutiny. They're deathly afraid,
sure.
And maybe not for good reason, but they are afraid that that's going to come up to bother them. And I want to say, that the Police Memorial Foundation is changing part of its mission to address this issue.
Good.
It's
great.
A new thing because it was about making sure police officers are safe and making sure the families are taken care of in case of worst case scenario, either a the death or a catastrophic injury to a police officer. But now there's a real move around the country, and I know here in Chicago there's a move to make this now turn toward suicide prevention, which, it's, as you pointed out, three in the last,
Less than 3 months.
Right. Yep. 6 weeks, I think it's been, including, you know, one who was, I believe, a sergeant, right? Who took his own life in the car. In his car while on patrol. So it's a desperate situation. I understand the pressure that they're under and the stress that they feel and the lack of support in many cases that they feel. And that is really what is at the root here, and it does need to be addressed on so many different from a few different angles here. So, Ben, thank you for doing that report. That's important. So we'll see you tonight.
We'll be
at WGN TV News at 9, right, for that?
Yep.
And you can start with WGN TV News starting at 4 o'clock right here on the other side of town, but the same side of the corporate ledger. And that's the most important thing. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for introducing me to your friend today, too. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, come by anytime.
Yeah, no, I got that
10%
thing.
10% off. Great
Judy haircut, has got
Ben.
The WGN News being brought to you by American Weathermakers.
You've had tensions with Prime Minister Trudeau.
Yes.
How did that affect your ability to get this deal done?
I don't think it did. He's a professional. I'm a professional. We had very strong tensions. It was just an unfair deal, whether it was Mexico or Canada. And now it's a fair deal for everybody. It's a much different deal. It's a brand new deal. It's not NAFTA redone. It's a brand new deal. I just spoke with him. We have a great relationship, and we're going to work as a partner.
It's not NAFTA. It's USMCA. U.S.-Mexico-Canadian
It's the
agreement.
Yes, USMCA. Right. Yeah. Not sure what that means.
Doesn't roll off the tongue.
No. As a matter of fact, it not only doesn't roll off the tongue, he's trying to make it sound like USMC. Like, it was like, I like it because it sounds like the Marine Corps. It's like he's playing it's like he's an 8-year-old playing in the room, and he's playing Risk, and he's also playing Toy Soldiers all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The former ambassador, he's an adult in the room to Canada, is joining us, Bruce Hayman. And
how are you?
Thank you. I'm well, sir. I hope you are well. Here's the question that I think is on the minds of a lot of people who are watching this. He said this is not like NAFTA. This is totally different. It's completely different. It's totally better. It's not what we had before. Is he right about that?
Well, in small part. So let's just first talk. The good news is we don't have this hanging over our head. So that's the good news. The bad news is that he went out and beat on our partners in so many ways, which I'll go over in a second. But he beat on our partners, and to get an outcome that he could have had a year ago by just diplomatic exchanges. The reality is much of this NAFTA updating, USMCA, much of this updating is brand, number one. Number two, we did a lot of work on a prior trade agreement. They took all that language, we meaning the Obama team, they took about 2/3 of this agreement. They kind of just took that language and slapped it in this agreement. And so they did update it, but it's not like they negotiated anything spectacular out of it. And then this whole thing on dairy, which he made such a big deal about in the prior negotiations for that Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Obama team got 3.25%. He gets 3.59%, less than 0.25% more, given all that he said about Canada, et cetera. I think that people will say, what? You only got 0.25% more? I don't know if it was worth the damage we did to our relationship.
Just on the dairy part alone, they got 0.25% more. Yeah.
What about the cars, Bruce? Because wasn't another key piece?
Before we get to cars, finish that.
Yeah.
On dairy, it was just 0.25%? I want to understand that.
So it's 3.59% more right now, but 3.25% of that was already negotiated out in TPP, had he stayed in TPP.
So that
should have easily been done to get the 3.25%,
Okay, so there's just a little bit. The bottom line is, without getting a lot of numbers here, because that's very confusing unless you have them in front of you.
Yeah.
But the idea is that it's a small increase in the dairy,
right,
given a year's worth of flogging of this and saying that the dairy is the most important thing and that our dairy farmers are getting screwed. It's a marginal increase for them. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Tiny. Yeah.
So on the subject of cars, when we last spoke, I know there were a lot of concerns about cars moving back and forth, being part Canadian parts, part American parts, and what do you call them, and how do you classify them? But there were tariffs that were, causing an ugly piece of this war.
Yeah. Yeah. No change, really. If you look at the U.S.-Canada relationship in autos, it's the same as it was before. They did put a cap on if duties are ever imposed on autos around the world. They did put a cap that's like 40% more cars than Canada currently makes and sells to the United States. So that really is a non-event. He didn't really get anything on the cars of any consequence.
So what is this?
By the way, he did get it in Mexico. He did get it in Mexico, so don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But that was already pre-agreed to with the Mexicans and increasing wages in North American content. But North American content don't mean anything to Canada.
Okay, so all right, so let's go back to what's in it for the United States here, and that's really the issue, which is in the United States, in Mexico he's going to require, and this is something they agreed to in the Mexican deal that they had done.
Right,
they required that the minimum wage be $16 an hour down there, and that Mexico not make it as hard to unionize those workers as Mexico was making, the Mexican government was making it for unionization. So the AFL-CIO is happy with that. So unions are relieved by that. And this, again, this was already agreed to. This now Canada signs on to their part of it, and then this thing then goes to Congress to be ratified in the next 90 days. But
correct. So this is good. We got this done, and we got this out of the way.
Right.
Saying is this public flogging of Canada and the prime minister taxing their steel and aluminum for national security reasons and threatening their entire auto industry and bringing them to the brink to get this. I would say that this is the same thing you could have gotten a year ago and without doing all that.
Is there, in terms of the American consumer, are there advantages to the American consumer that they were not realizing under NAFTA?
I think this is going to cost Americans more. I don't think it helped the American consumer very much at all. They kept the steel and aluminum tariffs on in Canada, which is wrong, and that needs to be fixed. But let's put that aside a second. That 25% charge on steel in Canada and 10% aluminum comes straight into your cars and all the things that are made of steel and aluminum, which is just about everything that we have in the United States. So that's going to go up. And then the implementation of the things they did do on auto and Mexico are just going to increase costs that will get passed on to the consumer as well. So I think at the end of the day, we kept our North American auto relationship, but we've added the cost.
Okay.
The president says that there's a big, you know, jobs story to tell here, that jobs will stay in the United States. Do you think that's coming from the Mexico side? I mean, it certainly doesn't seem you're describing anything that would affect it from the Canadian side of this deal.
No, nothing from the Canadian side. And what's happened more recently, you know, maybe on the margin, an incremental plant maybe doesn't get moved to Mexico as a result of the content rules and wages, but I'm skeptical of that. The biggest risk to the American worker right now is automation and technological change, where, you know, you've got that new Amazon Go store and you can walk in and have no cashiers. Well, this is the future, everyone, and they're doing that in manufacturing, and they're doing that in retail, and they're doing that at, you know, most parts of our economy. And it's not the Mexicans or the Canadians that are taking American jobs. We have to retool our economy and re-educate people and adapt to this huge technological change that's taking place. He's blaming this, you know, this gap between rich and poor on Mexico, and he did it from the very beginning, and it sells well maybe on the stump, but it's not factually correct.
That's a very important point, because if you look at what America's going to look like technologically in the next decade and two decades out, so by 2028 and 2038, the human interaction as part of a retail exchange is going to be minimal. And we talk about, he crows about the lowest unemployment rate in, you know, of all times. Never in the history of humanity has there ever been a lower unemployment rate than there is right now. And that statistically is correct. That does take into account, again, you know, we talked about during the Obama years, there was always this discussion about people who had left the employment world and were not coming back to the employment world. But under the people that would be looking for a job, essentially, people are able to find them. Now, on average wage, and there's two different ways of looking at average wage, but the on average wage, it might be up a little incrementally, it might be down depending on how you look at it, but it's around the same. It's not moved a lot, because what we're learning here is that there's a lot of people living in the gig economy. If you are a millennial or you have kids who are millennials, you know that they're often working two or three jobs. And Uber does not count as a job because Uber is working on self-driving cars. Right. And eventually
5 years out, potentially.
Right. Within the decade, those Uber jobs are going to go away and cabs are going to go away and retail workers are going to go away. Fast food workers are going to go away. People who are clerks in stores are going to go away. The same way when you call any kind of company and you now talk to an automated voice, when you walk into a store, you're going to have an automated experience. And it is going. And so what happens to that level of the economy? This has nothing to do with Trump. This has to do with, although he's president at the moment, and hopefully this administration is planning for what's going to happen there. And, you know, he's very political. Everything he does is designed for, you know, to send a message that he's good, everybody else is bad. But the guys that were standing behind him, men and women who were standing behind him today in this meeting in the Rose Garden when he was announcing this, those people, you hope, are thinking about ways that the American economy is going to sustain this technological change that we're about to go through, where we will not need humans in the chain. It's not like future world, right? That's not like Westworld. This is happening now. I mean, you just pointed out that Amazon store. So, you know, where do they actually head from here?
It's happening at an incredibly fast rate. And I will tell you, whether you're the next mayor of Chicago, the next governor, the next president of the United States, you need to think about what our country as city and state are going to look like in 2050. And start planning for that,
right,
and start thinking about that, and start implementing that strategy. Because if we don't, and all we're thinking about is tomorrow morning and the next morning, then we're going to wake up one day and be left behind. Now, I have no doubt America will compete very ably in the world going forward. But, you know, we'll compete much better if we prepare ourselves for this technological change. And there are other countries around the world that are rapidly investing in this. And, you know, my concern is the Trump administration is very focused on old economy type jobs and coal and steel and, you know, old line manufacturing. That's fine. That's great. The problem is it's not sustainable and it's going to be replaced going forward. Right. And so he's not thinking long term. It's just very short-term transactional thinking.
Right. And the steel and the coal industry, for example, I mean, steel is a little different, but the coal industry, we're talking about maybe 2,000 jobs at the level that he's talking about in terms of, you know, coal miners going back to work. There's certainly going to be salespeople, but that doesn't really, you know, that's not what he's talking about. Those kinds of white-collar jobs are not who he's talking about. Those coal towns are not coming back because the people, it's a guy pressing a button that's sending a machine down into the mine because we don't want people down in the mines. I don't know why he makes that romantic to go down into the mine with a pickaxe and people coming out and they can't breathe and they got, you know, and they're sick and they're making their family sick with the dust on their clothes. I mean, that stuff ended years ago. And so we do have to think about the future. I know that it's not in the political moment to think about that, but I think it is. I think I feel a responsibility to say these things because we do have to move our eyes up a little bit here and start looking at the horizon as opposed to what's just in front of us. All right, Ambassador, thank you as always. It's a great pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you, Ambassador.
Thanks,
Bruce Hayman, former ambassador to Canada from the United States. I just want to make that perfectly clear.
Mm-hmm.
Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Sorry about that. I'd gotten up for a second. The big question now.
Okay.
The big question now on the Jason Van Dyke murder trial. Will he or won't he testify?
Okay. Don Show with Anna DeBlantis, yes. Right here, 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us, brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems. Tom, let me throw something at you right now.
All right.
Hi,
Happy
Tom.
Monday, Happy by the way, Monday. Guys. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. I have, and as well to you, I have coming up this hour and in the 6 o'clock hour. We've got two chances at this today.
Okay.
A chance for people to win a pair of tickets to a catered super suite at the home opener of the Blackhawks on Sunday.
Woo.
They're taking on the Torontos, as I like to say, the Maple Leaves. An original six matchup featuring a special pregame ceremony honoring Stan Mikita. And tickets for all games this season are on sale at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. Can I just tell you something? Can I just tell you something about the Toronto Maple Leaves, the Torontos? The Toronto Maple Leaves have sold out their stadium. In Toronto. They've been in two stadiums since World War II. Since the last day of World War II, sold out every home game.
Is that right?
And they've only won the Stanley Cup once in that period of time.
Wow.
Right? It's been a bit of a drought in Toronto.
Yeah.
As it has been in Canada. They get very frosty about that in Canada, about how few Stanley Cups they have won in the last, you know.
But wow, backing generation. The team. That's pretty cool.
That is amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't see that all the time in America.
You know, the closest in the, well, I wonder if Green Bay isn't like that, you know? They've fielded some amazing teams.
Yeah, but the other piece of that though too is it's a big city, but they are so hockey intensive.
Yeah.
In Toronto, which is just
great city.
It's an amazing city.
Yes.
So it is. It's like a religion there, it's a big deal. So to have the Maple Leafs here in an original six matchup to open up the seat, you don't see this very often.
No.
And out of the Eastern Conference, this is the only time you get to see them, is because now they only play a couple games between the Eastern Conference teams and the Western Conference teams in a whole season. And it's really great to see those two sweaters on the ice at the same time.
That's true.
Because it takes you back to like the great tradition of hockey.
Well, you're just off, starting the week off as Santa Con here.
I am. Well, you know what? I got to tell you right now. I just booked. I booked first class accommodations to Atlanta in the first Sunday of February.
Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And
you're all set.
Yeah,
huh?
I'm all set.
Super Bowl.
It's L-I-I-I-I-I.
Yeah.
Next year, it's going to be leave, like Shriver. So you
don't think you're putting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse?
Did you watch the game?
Not at all.
Oh, my gosh.
Not at all. We literally, at halftime, all of our friends met. You know, like, we have a designated spot in the concourse.
Uh-huh.
We all met in the concourse. We're like, all right, now what do we do? And we never could remember a time where at the halftime, you're like, well, the Cubs are playing, right? You want to go up there?
Right.
I mean, it was crazy because it was like the game was over.
Electric.
And it was fun to, it was so. Yeah. Fun to watch, and all of a sudden, I mean, it was. I wouldn't say that he looked like Brett Favre, there were some amazing moments for Mitchell Trubisky, and he's got to be so happy today, and he's got to be so, a lot of weight off his shoulders.
Oh, yeah,
that's got to be a confidence builder, isn't it? I mean, going into future games and all to get to something like that under your belt.
It's got to be. Though, I will say that, I mean, it was a good game, and the defense played great. I mean, the defense is just that. It's a monster, monster, monster defense. And if the offense is even halfway good, they're going to be a playoff team.
Well, that's true.
It's like
you don't even need the offense to be that great, and look at how great they were.
Well, look, in 1985, that 1985-86 season, when they won the Super Bowl, their offense was not great. And they had for the 3 years prior to that, the offense wasn't great. And they were a playoff team because they had this crazy, crazy great defense. Ed Obradovich is going to join us coming up a little later on this hour, and we'll talk about this with him. But I just got to say how exciting it was for them to be that good yesterday. The Akeem Hicks, though, the great defensive lineman, he got thrown out of the game for pushing an official. Which means he's probably going to also be suspended for at least one other game.
Yeah,
I think we're going to get the answer to that this afternoon. So we'll let you know when that is. He's going to get fined $33,000, and then whatever, you know, whatever else happens, you hope you don't lose him for another game because he is so he's critical to the defense.
So they have a bye week next week, though, the Bears, right? So that wouldn't even count. It would be the following
game. So.
Well, it's it's exciting to hear you this excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got a little worried about our beloved Chicago Cubs. I mean, it's a, it is a little bit. I don't like losing your way into the playoffs here. But we'll just have to see if they. It's a one and done tomorrow night at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I don't like the way that is.
They don't get past the winner of the. Now this will be. It's good. The Dodgers and the Rockies are playing right now at Dodger Stadium. They got whoever wins that game's got to get on a plane. They got to get here. They'll get here in the middle of the night. They got to get be up and ready to go for the game tomorrow. So the home field advantage and then the overnight flight and everything it does favor the Cubs tomorrow. But still, I hate the idea of the the Cubs, which have been this dominant. I know it's hard for me to even hear myself say this out loud, but Cubs being this most dominant team in Major League Baseball over the last 4 years, to maybe kind of not make it to the NLDS.
Well, let's hang in there, Ro. You know,
you had me all excited there for a second. Did you hear that? And then look what you just did. Just brought me down.
Don't blame Tom for
that. I'm the one who brought it up.
But still. I won the wild card before.
That's true. That's how this whole thing started, by winning the wild card.
It's true. There's a lot of momentum coming off of that when they win it tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay.
So there.
Okay. Yes.
All right. I'm gonna relax.
What about the weather? Is the weather doing good?
Well, we've got some storms coming tonight, and these are going to have to be watched. The setup is remarkably similar to the one that produced all the wind damage last week, with one exception. That is, these storms will be arriving beyond peak heating, so there's a little less buoyancy in the air. But we've got these same strong upper winds over these things, and they are popping up in Wisconsin and out in Iowa now. So it looks like northern Illinois, extreme southern Wisconsin, and that includes the Chicago area, should be on the lookout. It looks like the period from 9 tonight to 3 in the morning will bracket across the greater Chicago area, the period that we have to watch these storms. And they'll be flying along again.
So 9 p.m. tonight is when it should start.
Yeah, that's when the heavier storms will be there. If you're up north and west of us.
Is this thunder, lightning, and wind? What are we looking at?
Yes. The major severe risk with these is not so much tornadoes or even hail. This would be strong winds, much as was the case last week. And the reason for that is these things bubble up into high, strong upper winds in the jet stream, and they can bring some of that energy down to the surface. And the storms themselves tend to fly along quickly. So these things will be moving at 40, 50 miles an hour, no doubt. And those fast-moving storms, you got to keep your eyes on those. They can gush out some pretty strong winds. And there may be some heavy rains in parts of the area, too. Some spots could see 3 inches of rain. So the area is being outlooked as a marginal or slight risk for excessive rainfall, which is actually, it doesn't sound like much, but that's actually a rather high assessment of risk for some heavy rains. Okay. Then tomorrow it's quiet, and we're going up into the mid-80s on Wednesday.
Oh!
So this is going to be like summer. That's
summer!
That's
summer
a hooky day. That's a beach day.
Yeah.
What day did you say was hooky?
Well, Wednesday. Wednesday. Yeah, Violetta, make your plans.
Thanks.
Don't encourage her.
I know.
Please don't.
But you know what? We have so few of these 80-degree days left. We were looking. We have normally from this point forward something like 12 additional 70-degree days. That's been the average through history.
Okay.
And we have about two or three additional 80-degree days. Now, there have been some years when we've had more than that, and we've been running so much above normal. This may be one of them before it's all over, but it does look like it's going to get pretty cool next week. So let's enjoy these days when we get them.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Look at me now.
I see that beaming smile.
So if there's a Cubs night game tomorrow,
they
should get
fine.
It in. Shouldn't have a problem.
Oh, the weather will be terrific. Yeah. Yeah. No problem at all. It'll be a little cool, but no rain. So
I'm ready.
Good night for victory and for all that that entails.
Yes, all that victory entails.
Yes.
Yes. I don't even know what that means.
Libations.
I'm going to go, there might be beer at the park.
Yeah.
There might be...
Do you like beer?
I found my way into... I do. I like beer.
We've been hearing a lot of people say beer. They like beer recently.
You used to like beer, and you still like beer.
I like beer a lot.
Oh, no.
Still do?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with beer.
Is the keg half full or half empty for you?
Yeah.
I gotta go home and I have a beer.
Did you see Saturday Night
Live?
it was
quite a
thing. And then John Oliver was pretty good last night, too.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. When I was watching it live, when it was actually happening, when he was testifying about his love for beer, I thought, there were a couple things that struck me. You know, I stopped over the weekend. I had a little time to stop and think. I went to a wedding on Saturday night.
Oh.
One of my daughter's closest friends from high school.
How nice.
Got married. It's just so much fun to, you know, as a girl that, you know, spent so much time, like, in my house, right?
Sure.
You know how you always have, there's kids constantly in your house after your kids get to a certain age.
Doesn't that make you feel old?
Yes. Oh, you have no idea.
Now they're grown adults.
I feel old when my interns get married.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll tell you how I felt old. First of all, it's so funny because, you know, my daughter got married last year. Now she got married and she was my daughter's maid of honor. And now, so I'm there at her wedding and I'm watching this thing happen and I'm watching all the kids that were, you know, in my house playing in my house, you know, from the time that they were little kids.
Married.
Right? Like Margo, that's the girl's name, was like a little kid in my house. And then there were parties in my house that I had to worry about.
Right.
You know, and I was like,
right.
And I was going down, constantly knocking on doors. Hey!
What's going on
in there? And now they're married, and you know you're talking about. There's a point, and every parent knows this. There's a point where you're worried that your kids are having sex. Then there's a point where you're worried your kids are not having enough sex. You know, and it's like, what are you doing? Let's go. Keep moving here. And so that was that experience. But I had a lot of time to stop and think about this whole moment. You know, life moments like that.
Well, there's been a lot to digest.
There really was.
You don't know what to make of all this. Well, it's almost overwhelming to the senses, you know?
So I'm watching that, and then Saturday night, I get home, and I watch Saturday Night Live, and then I'm like, that was my take on what I was watching.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obviously, you know, a hyperstatic version of it, because it was this, you know, it was condensed. But the problem with Saturday Night Live, if you're watching and you're like, oh, damn it, it's a liberal agenda. The problem with that is that they were using the exact words that were being said.
That's it.
That was the problem.
It was like a replication of what actually happened.
Yes, you know, just dramatically.
Right out of the mouth gestures and all, you know.
That's right, the little mouth.
Yeah, and the crinkling of the nose and all that kind of stuff. I'll tell you, Matt Damon did a heck of a job.
He's a great actor.
That was really something. Yeah.
I like beer! Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing, is that you get to a point where... you know, you do stop and you think about the ridiculousness of this. I kind of think that the FBI thing is going to end with a whimper, and that Kavanaugh's probably going to get confirmed on Friday. But we are in such a hyper-partisan, goofy part of our American life that I just wonder when, like all things. I didn't think Paris Hilton was going to go away, and she went away. I think that like all things, you know, this moment will change, and we will evolve into something. I just want us to evolve into something better and not worse.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm hoping.
But how does it break, too? How do you break the partisanship? Everyone thought when McCain died and you heard the speeches at his funeral that maybe that would be food for thought and cause people to pause.
Jeff Flake, today. Last night he was on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, right? And they recorded that. That was fascinating,
Saturday,
too.
I think. And, you know, he said that there's no incentive in Washington for there to be, to negotiate with the other side. There's no incentive. And the honest to God truth here is, and I don't want to sound like some kind of, you know, crazy turn of the century Marxist running around with a pamphlet. You know, I've seen Reds enough times to know that didn't end well.
No.
But I think that what we have found here in the aftermath of a very important Supreme Court decision in Citizens United, that to treat companies and big money and corporate interests like the interests of individuals, which is what that's about, it allows now the agenda for public policy, whatever it happens to be, whether it's about the economy or about the environment or about public safety or health or how you are treated as a patient, all those kinds of things that the federal government at some point does have purview over, that the agenda is set by not in the best interests of the greatest number of people in the population, but by the interests of those companies that have skin in those games.
Yeah. And money, that's money scary. And interests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no, it's quite an issue. What do you think about increasing the number of justices on the Supreme Court? Is that a fix?
No. No.
It's no.
Because nine going, it doesn't matter, because you still need a majority.
Yeah.
You know, and so it doesn't really, and that nine seems to, now that is, that number has changed over the years. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's a static number and it's constitutionally mandated that there be nine. I mean, if they want to go up to 11 or they want to go to 13, you know, but then you get into, I think nine is a doable number. It, every time, you know, you forget about the Supreme Court unless there's a nomination up.
Yeah.
You never really think about
this. Or some kind of ruling that impacts your life.
Right. But that's what I'm saying, is that it's that you don't think about the Supreme Court is not something you're thinking about day in and day out. And you don't think about it as an elective issue because you're not electing them. But you are, in essence, mm-hmm. voting for people who will, you know, eventually make that decision.
Sure. Bring like-minded people in.
Right. Now, and I do think that you're going to see, like, one of the things about Kavanaugh, and I'm, you know, I don't know. I want to take all the politics out of it for a second. The guy has been on the federal bench in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the better part of a decade. And, you know, he's got a very long record of things that he has done there. And so it's not like we're getting a guy, it's like a job interview, and it's not like a guy is coming over from, you know, AT&T to come over and be the Supreme Court justice, right? And they go, oh, well, you have no related experience. It's not like a guy who had never been in public office before is doing this. Oh, wait, what? But in Kavanaugh's case, you know, he's been doing it for a long time. So I'm not quite as afraid of him as I think a lot of people are, but I also do think... that I've seen this archetype before of a human being, and they're just trying to make him into an archetype as opposed to a judge. But he did not help himself on Thursday. I thought when it was done, I thought, wow, that was a really strong, yeah, intense performance. But then I went back and I thought about it. Do I want a guy who's like, I like beer, okay?
Yeah. Well, you think about, his entire world was under attack, too.
I mean,
you know, if suddenly someone came out after you and said you're accused of gang rape, I mean, there's a lot there that you would have an angry reaction to. It felt... He was defending his honor, his family's honor, his entire record, his everything he's ever done, and it all came to
a
head.
And I understand.
I think the part that was a little more worthy of criticism was the partisan nature of what he said. Even if he felt that this was a pure partisan attack on him, I think there are some who now question whether or not, when he's on the Supreme Court, whether that plays a role.
Will he remember this for the rest of his life?
Will he remember it, and will it impact the way he sees the world and his future, you know, decisions?
Yeah. Or beer. Now, I think he has to recuse himself in case there is a beer issue at the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think?
That I think so.
I like beer! Yeah. All right, well,
Budweiser goes to the Supreme Court on something.
Miller.
He's exactly. got to stand down.
Yeah. It's Lagunitas versus Budweiser. I think he's going to have to go, I got to recuse myself because I like beer!
Yeah.
I like it all! All right.
Still like beer.
Tom, we
always like beer.
All right, well, watch for the storms tonight. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Talk to you later, guys.
Appreciate it. Judy Pilak is standing by. She's got the WGN News. And just about, coming up at the bottom of the hour, right? So I got to talk to you about what's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Don't I, Judy?
Yes, another legal blow for Drew Peterson.
Tickets to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, of course. Why not? After that game, many of us thought about that.
Yeah, I got my tickets to the big game. Kevin Powell's here.
It's happening.
No big deal.
Where are you sitting? Can I sit with you? Do you have an extra one? I'm available
Is
that weekend.
Is there room in the hotel for the entire crew here?
I got a suite. No big deal.
I'll sleep on the floor. I'll make that sort of sacrifice for the team.
We'll get the sleeping bags. Doesn't matter. This is huge.
It was a great game. Beautiful game by the Bears.
How exciting is it? Kevin texted me immediately after the game.
Oh.
There was a shakiness. I mean, it was really a funny deal because there was just as there was in Green Bay for the opening game, all the Bears fans, you know, few and far between in Green Bay, mm-hmm. but we're looking at each other like, oh my God, what is this in the first half, right? And so yesterday in the first half at Soldier Field, with everybody in, I mean, there was, Tampa doesn't travel particularly well. So it was maybe, you know, there might be 10 Tampa jerseys I saw all day there. The crowd was all looking at each other like, wow, who are these guys?
It was something beautiful. And you're right. It was like that first half in Green Bay. And they just took it to them for full four quarters, though, which we didn't see in Green Bay, obviously. So a lot of reasons to be excited.
OB is joining us right now. And OB, I just want to say, the great Ed Obradovich, did my purchase of Super Bowl tickets and Super Bowl hotel room and limo to and from. I spent a lot of money yesterday on Super Bowl. Did I overspend?
Is that a wise move?
No, it might be some foolish money. You never know, but it might be some good money. You just don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
We liked what we saw, that's for sure. That was an exciting game.
Well, I'll tell you. There's a few things here. When you play, if you're a good team, if you're a good team, and you play a real bad team, and what you do, and and if you put them away, I mean, if you, so to speak, you bury them. I mean, you crush them. That's what the Bears did. That's what they did yesterday. They took a bad team that was, I mean, to me, looking at those defensive backs, it was amazing. And I'd just like to read you a little quote by one of the papers downtown, by one of the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was, the Bears will not often encounter a defense so negligent with its assignments and so woefully out of place. Defenses do not leave receivers uncovered downfield. I mean, when you saw it, you guys saw the same things I saw, Dan saw. My God, they were throwing some. There was not a defender in the screen. I have no idea what that team was doing. The Buccaneers, I was just absolutely mystified, and that went on the whole game.
Yeah, well, they're
not
also,
a good thing about it is then we took it to them. You want to play stupid football? Good. We'll really give it to you.
Yeah. Well, there was not only missed assignments, but there were a ton of stupid penalties on them as well. They were getting in their own way. The Bears were disciplined, except for Akeem Hicks. I mean, I do want to talk about that because that Akeem Hicks move is, you know, it's one of those circumstances. Akeem Hicks is clearly a great football player, and he is one of the keys to this defense. If Akeem Hicks isn't coming up the middle and, you know, taking three guys with him as he's bull rushing toward whatever's in front of him, you know, it makes it easier for Khalil Mack. It makes it easier for Roquan Smith and all the other guys on the line. He by putting himself in a position to be suspended for a game by pushing an official, I mean, come on now.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, what you just said was right on. That was very astute, young man.
Thank you.
I really liked what you said. Because Hicks, a good rushing team, on defense that gets to the quarterback. Go back to the Bears 85 when they set the record. I believe they set it with 72 sacks. You had Richard Dennon on the outside and a couple other guys on the outside that played. But you had Dan Hampton in the middle. And Dan caved that in. And the reason why that is so important, I cannot tell you. You could have the greatest defensive end in the world, but if you let that quarterback step up, he'll escape either through the 5 or 6 hole, or he'll step up and make a play. Well, what's happening with the Bears because of Hicks and Goldman, what's going on, Ro? They're caving it in. They're taking that center and those guards and pushing them back. So when you see the quarterback try to step up and go, he can't. There's nowhere to go. And who do you have? You have Superman coming around the end.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't get him, he's got his hand. He just put his hand in there. And the point that has been way back when, now, and forever will be, Ro, if you can get that cave-in in the middle, boy, you really got something, and we got it.
Yeah.
And if these kids on offense, and I know we played a terrible defense, but if they can pull it together in the next 2 weeks and go down to Miami, and you can take Miami, and all of a sudden New England becomes
you saw what they did. Miami
not that
did
much of a challenge.
Yeah, New England killed them yesterday.
But I'm going to tell you something. We might have something going here. And what makes me believe that, when I think one of the most important stats in football, whether it's, excuse me, defense or offensive stat, there's a thing called the average gain per offensive play. Ours yesterday was 8.3. That is a playoff team. That is a Super Bowl team. Anytime you get into the eights, you get into the nines, that is a giant, giant number. So kudos to our offense. And again, I understand how bad that team was, but the fact of the matter is when you play them, that's what you do. Take them out. And they certainly did. 8.3. Kudos to the Bears offense.
Now explain that number again, that 8.3 stands for.
It's the average gain per offensive play. It's a stat in the National Football League. And any time you get, like, even in the sevens or high sevens, but when you're in the eights and nines, you should try to look that up from week to week.
Yeah.
Or call me and I'll give it to you. The total offensive, the average gain per offensive play was 8.3, and that is huge. That's giant. That's taking advantage of a team, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. And I'll tell you what, I was so damn proud when it came to the second half that they didn't lay down, they didn't stop, they kept going after them and pouring it on. I'm going to tell you what, that's what a Super Bowl, that's what a world championship team does.
I would have hoped, I was hoping they were going to put him in position to get that seventh TD, because that would really be something. Because if he goes into the record books in the NFL as one of the most productive performances ever with seven TD passes, he tied a Bears game record, but actually Johnny Luge isn't
1949.
Yeah, 49. The 49 record. But I think if I'm not mistaken,
Luckman threw eight, I believe, in a single game.
Right. Okay, so, but in the modern era, this is a big number, no matter how you do it, and sure. I'm very proud of him. I have to say, though, I went back and I watched it on TV then. That's how excited I mean, you can tell I'm excited, and then I'm going to watch a Shortcuts tonight on DirecTV. I got to see everything that's going to happen here. But there were a number of times he did not hit a guy in stride. He hit guys who either got themselves open or the defender fell down, and they had to either slow up for the ball or turn around for the ball. Listen, there were a couple great plays to that first touchdown.
The throw to Allen Robinson, the throw to Burton, and the throw that stuck out to me was that slot out route. I think you know what I'm talking about, OB, where Taylor Gabriel, little guy, he runs a little post out, and Trubisky has missed him twice this year, and they would have been huge gains, particularly that one in week one at Green Bay.
Yes.
And that exact same route, he hit him. He hit him right in the numbers, OB. When I see stuff like that, I say, okay, that's the progress you want to see in a young quarterback.
Exactly right. The progress is there.
Well, I'm going to tell you, we were all kind of happy and thrilled about what we saw, and I just, especially the second half, folks, that's when you tell, when a team comes out, what kind of shape are you in, how bad do you want this win, you got them down, and just really take them down. And I know sometimes the people say, what the hell is he talking about? You know, they beat him, they do that. No, you don't. You want to maul them. Believe me, you do.
Yeah,
you play defense in the National Football League, and you got 11 guys coming after you every play, knocking you, hitting you around. You know what? Go after them. Go get it. Put it on them.
The Wilbur Marshall Award for Unsung Hero goes to Danny Trevathan. No one knows how to pronounce his name in a booth. Nobody knows the people are like this. And Trevathan, Danny Trevathan. Right. Danny Trevathan is a guy that is, I mean, he's in on every play too.
And a leader. They love him in that locker room.
Well, oh my God. But you've got a guy. If I am an offensive coordinator or, God forbid, a quarterback, like that would ever happen in the NFL, and I'm looking at those guys, right, that core three of the defensive of the linebackers and the way they play that in the 3-4. What do you do? What do you do? And everybody's number is 50 on this team. Somehow they've added 50s. There's more than 10 digits in the 50s now. It's great. It's a ton of fun to watch. And it was light, obviously, for you, OB. I mean, you grew up a Bears fan, let alone played for them, let alone been, a part of this organization as a broadcaster forever. Your whole life. This is, this, it, I know there's a little bit of hope, and it's the first time in a really long time.
And real hope, not just blind Bears optimism.
And not,
it's real.
This is not 2006 hope, because, you know, that was a fine team. That was a great defense. This defense is better.
This defense that we have, they'll take anybody down. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what. Even that, you know what I saw late in the third quarter and fourth quarter? All of a sudden, Fangio, our defensive coordinator, he came with the blitzes.
Yeah.
Cornerback safety blitz. I think he came with a Mike blitz up the middle, and we don't usually blitz that much, but I saw a lot of blitzing going on in the second half. And again, I cannot say enough about this defense. This defense is absolutely, you talk about for real. There's no phonies out there. Eddie Goldman, the safety, that kid is dead on for real. He's terrific. That's a guy that'll take you to the Super Bowl. That's a guy that'll get that important interception. You got Hicks and Goldman up the middle. They will continue to crush that thing. And you got Mack, who is he's second to none in rushing the passer. They've got it. They've got it. The offense, our offensive line, the guys that we have there, they're good enough to get it done.
Oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
They're good enough to move the ball. They're good enough to knock people around, to get Jordan the yards that he deserves to get, because he's quite a runner. So I am absolutely thrilled because of this win. And again, Ro, if you're what I'm talking about, again, when you look at stats, there's all kinds of stats. The most important stat in the National Football League in an offensive way is the average game per offensive play. And again, 8.3, that's giant.
All right, and one other name I want to point out, too, that I thought had a monster game, and here's a guy who's kind of been lingering around on the defense, is Roy Robertson-Harris.
Yes.
He played. He not only played a great game, he played a smart game. There were a couple times he was alone with the quarterback and found ways not to get the penalty, but still to be menacing. He's also, when you look at the sideline, he's the biggest guy on the sideline.
He's making an impact as a rotation guy.
Yeah. He's 6'7".
Yeah, he is amazing. He's making, I mean, he was a special teams guy last year. This guy is going to be, that's a name you're going to hear getting called, especially if Akeem Hicks goes out. You know, yeah. I think you're going to, it's not going
to
be good.
Obi, what would you say to Trubisky at this point? We saw this monster game from him, and obviously he can't play every game like that, can he? I mean, but he's certainly, this offense seems to be clicking. What would you say?
He's got to study more. He's got to be there every day. He's got to study. He's got to run the plays. He's got to play everything for real. You know, I guess I don't know how many days they're getting off. I hope the heck Mitch stays around and he stays with the coaches and goes through it.
Push-ups.
All I can tell you, Anna, is when you're in this at that young a quarterback, okay, the seriousness of what you're doing has to totally engulf you. I mean, you've got to be on it every day, every hour. And why am I saying that? Because you're not playing 162 games.
Right.
You're playing 16 games, and you got to get into it. You got to breathe it, eat it, and you got to love it.
That's why we love it as fans, because it's such a limited thing.
So true.
That's why you have to absorb, when it's good, you have to absorb every ounce of it.
And I tell you, it was great yesterday. And again, just to sum it up here, offensively, we got backs that are better than average. We got an offensive line that is better than average. Receivers, we don't know yet, but they're the best receivers I've seen in here for the last, I don't know, 8 years, whatever it's been. And we got a quarterback, hopefully, that's starting to see the light. And we'll know in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, where we're at with them. And let's hopeful that they go to Miami and knock them out, come back, and take care of New England. Wouldn't that be sweet?
Oh, that New England game. Oh, God, that New England game. Oh, God. All right, thank you very much, OB. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, OB.
You guys are the best. Bye.
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 All right, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top?
Crime is down in Chicago.
Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. All right. I would like to get so many things to share with you. First of all, we have another pair of tickets. Another pair of tickets coming up next hour. So stay tuned. Stay close.
Where's my line?
Listen between 6 and 7 tonight, and mm-hmm. you could rip us off for a chance, for a pair, if you win, of tickets to a catered super suite. Super suite!
I like the way that sounds.
I mean, this is one of the best giveaways we ever had. Opening night against Toronto? Are you kidding me?
I know! For Sunday night.
Super sweet.
Super. That is the opposite of not super. That is what that's, right? I mean, who mm-hmm. wants to go to a not super sweet? This is a super sweet!
Well, it's the opposite of super sour.
Exactly. It's super sweet.
Judy would know.
Correct. Wait, hold on. And this is one of the great opening nights ever. Because, you know, you want to see an original six team on an opening night. You want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs. You want to see, you know, the Rangers or the Bruins. Right? Canadiens. That's the kind of thing you want to see. You want to see the Red Wings. You're going to see the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And you might see the return of Corey Crawford.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's a possibility as well.
This is a season of reckoning. And it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be so electric, so alive, and a beautiful tribute to Stan Mikita to start the evening.
It'll be very emotional.
So I think that's it. It's going to be the deal. So stay close, because we have one more super sweet pass today to give away. Pass for two. To the super suite. We nice. Might have some tomorrow. We might have some on Wednesday. We might have some all week long.
Keep them coming.
Yeah. It's really great. We're going to fill up the super suite with our own people. I might have to stop by the super suite.
I was going
to
say, can we go? This sounds fun. Maybe wander over there.
I know. It's really going to be great. God, I love the Blackhawks. Mm, and hockey is back. Baby, as you hear in our promo.
You hear it.
Here we go. Are you ready? Yeah, here we go.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, here we go. Checking in at
number five.
I don't know. You see this Jeff Flake on the TV. He's been all over the place in the last 24
minutes,
hours.
In fact. Yep. Yeah.
And he also was speaking to a Forbes summit in Boston. And he basically said that last night on 60 Minutes, I mean, he basically said, listen, there's I mentioned it earlier, there's no way that there can be political compromise in Washington anymore. There's just no incentive to do it.
No.
And you're disincentivized not only by the general nature of how Republicans and Democrats go about their business in Washington, but also now in this presidency. And he tells this Forbes summit that he's not very happy with the way the president's behaving.
I could never warm to the president. Long before he ran, he talked about President Obama not being a citizen. I thought that itself is disqualified. You cannot do that. And then talked about John McCain in a derogatory way, and then talked about Mexicans in a derogatory way. And I just think that we've got to do better than that. We can't refer to our opponents, political opponents on the other side of the aisle, as losers and clowns. We have too big of issues to solve in this country than to just be partisan all the time.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now, last week, as you saw, he was the decider, if you will, in the move here by the Senate to allow the FBI to continue their investigation into Kavanaugh, to the allegations of by the Kavanaugh accusers here. They've apparently talked to one of the accusers. They're not going to talk to Julie Swetnick, who's now out talking to everybody else in the press.
She's on with MSNBC right now, and I think she has several other interviews booked.
Yeah, I think that's over now. But
throughout
she
the
was,
evening.
But yeah, so we'll get audio
airing.
Of that.
Yeah, at some point this evening.
We'll get audio of that when that becomes available. But the point is that it continues on because of Jeff Flake. So why did Jeff Flake make this move? Because he had made... an announcement in writing.
Right. He had already put out a release saying, I will vote for Judge Kavanaugh. He has my vote. And then hours later, everyone realized something was going on. And it was Jeff Flake deciding to do this. He'll move it out of committee. But he wants an FBI investigation.
But he was confronted by those two ladies in the elevator, right?
As he was on his way. Sexual assault survivors.
So did that have anything to do with his decision?
Well, it was that experience as well as a lot of others. I've got calls and emails and texts from women who I never thought I'd hear from in this regard, saying, here's what happened to me when I was young. Here's what happened to me 30 years ago. What Dr. Ford said really emboldened a lot of women to come forward. And that experience was... I'm not sure that any of my colleagues had one quite like that, but all of us have had experiences like this in the last week.
He wants to be president. Hmm. It'll be interesting if he can make it out of the Republican primary. It'll be interesting if he makes it out of Iowa. It'll be interesting if he makes it to Iowa.
Right. He's making a call for there to be strong opposition to Donald Trump from the Republican Party.
Right. But he would have to be the guy who does it. He looks like he's right out of Central Casting.
He kind of does.
Right?
Perfect hair.
Looks like
tan.
An aging golf pro is what he looks like. All right. Checking in at
number four.
It was supposed to be a triumphant press conference today. You know, the president out in the Rose Garden. They just signed. They got Canada to sign on to this now the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. It's a replacement for NAFTA. He said NAFTA was terrible, the worst thing he ever seen. And now there's USMCA, and it's beautiful. And it's great, even though we were just told within the hour by the former ambassador to Canada that two-thirds of this had already been agreed to going into the Trump presidency. So it's really not that much of a redo, but it is what it is. It's fine. It's great. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the United States. I'm happy for Canada. I'm happy for Mexico. Happy for Justin Trudeau and his wife. I'm happy, 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 happy. But this should be a victory dance. This should be a good thing. Americans should all breathe a sigh of relief that this is done, and we should be happy that the president was able to get it done. But then he couldn't help himself. He just couldn't help himself at the news conference because he didn't want to take questions. He didn't want to take questions about anything but this. I get it. And there was a way to do that, and then there was a way not to do that. The way to do it was, hey, I'll talk to you later about Kavanaugh because he was starting to get questions about it. We're going to do that at a separate event later on in the day. Let's concentrate on what we're doing here. Let's keep this to questions about this agreement. Cecilia Vega from ABC News started off.
Okay, question? Yeah, go ahead. Sure. She's shocked that I picked her. No. She's like in a state of shock.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
In a tweet this weekend, Mr. President, you said that it's incorrect to say you're limiting the scope of the FBI investigation.
What does that have to do with trade? I don't mind answering the question, but, you know, I'd like to do the trade
question. It has to do with the other headline in the news, which is the Kavanaugh
nomination. I know, but how about talking about trade, and then we'll get to that. We'll do.
Okay.
She said, I'm not. Thank you.
Right.
I'm not thinking.
I know you're not thinking. How about that?
Yeah, it was a really awful exchange.
Yes, behind you, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now that you've answered several questions on trade, I'd like to turn
Don't do that. Excuse me. Do you have a question on trade? One or two more questions on trade.
You answered several questions
on trade.
Okay,
don't do that. That's not nice.
Mr. President,
and besides that, somebody is before you. Excuse me. Don't do that. Do you have a question on trade?
You answered several questions.
Do you have a question on trade?
My question is on Judge Kavanaugh.
Okay, please, yes.
You said the FBI should interview whoever that they believe is appropriate. Does that include Julie Swetnick, the third accuser? And can you promise to release the full findings
from the FBI
after they finish their report, Mr. President?
Give me your question, please. Give her the mic, please.
But didn't he say that he was okay taking questions about Kavanaugh? He wanted to do the trade ones first, and he was going to allow people to move on who needed to go on, who were part of this news conference, and then he would answer those questions.
Okay, let's go. Come on. You want to, I guess, get off trade. I don't know.
You people
are falling asleep with trade. I think it's, to me, it's the most exciting thing you can talk about, right, Joni? Right?
All right.
It's like a great segue.
It's like when Dad's trying to help you with your homework and you don't know the answer. And you're like, he's like trying, but it's just bad.
I would just say that that the optics here. He constantly steps on his own optics. And there was a way to handle this up front, which is, hey, and be nice about it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a jerk to everybody. I know he feels like he has to, because then, you know, the people who are angry that support him are going to go, yeah, my guy's angry. Oh, he's angry at them too. I hate them too. But he's disrespectful of these people who are doing it. These two women who are doing this, right? Yeah. We're standing up, and he's basically getting on the back of his hand verbally. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? He could have said, listen, we're only taking trade questions here. If you don't have trade questions, we'll do the Kavanaugh stuff coming up in an hour inside.
Because he eventually did. He answered the Kavanaugh.
Right. He had to start doing it, but he just wanted to push some people around, and that was... I mean, come on. And then going after Cecilia Vega for, I know you're not, you never think.
Oh, gosh.
I mean,
who, that did come not on. Sound good.
It's like, that starts every fight in a household right there. It's right? Isn't that how every fight starts? You half hear something.
Them's fighting words.
Somebody says something
sure.
Like, so like a half kind of a, you know, a half shot at somebody.
Right.
Like, all right, that's it. All right. Judy, I could tell Judy would not take any of this crap.
Can
I'll
you
tell you that
you
right
said
now.
That to Judy?
What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
I got to get into one of those briefings. Two Inglewood brothers charged with killing their landlord.
Then there's this. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9.
Top 5-5 continues. We've worked our way to
number 3.
Serena Williams is going out of her comfort zone for breast cancer awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It's the month for that. The tennis star went topless and sang a cover of Divinyl's hit I Touch Myself for a new Breast Cancer Awareness Week music video.
I love myself. I want you to love me. When I feel down, I want you above me. I search myself. I want you to find me. I forget myself. Okay. I want you to remind me.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. There's the thing, though.
What's the thing?
There's the thing. I love the idea. I love Serena Williams. I love Serena Williams. I think Serena Williams is the one of the top five greatest athletes in American history.
Of all time. Yes.
Right?
No question.
But before you start singing, there's other ways to do this.
If she gets women to, she's flipping the meaning of touch myself, and it's very effective and probably goes viral. Mm-hmm. And if it gets more women to do self-examinations, then
okay.
Good for her.
No, I like the whole thing. I think lip syncing would have been better.
You didn't like her singing?
That's the thing. All right, checking in at
number 2.
Okay, here's another case of a guy stepping on his own message.
Uh-oh, what happened now?
Yeezy.
Oh, yeah.
Yee. He wants to be known as Yee now. Yee. Just Yee. Not Kanye. Just Yee. Yay. Yay.
I think it's Yee.
I he's cray cray is what Yee is. That's what I'm going to say right now. He was on the Saturday Night Live, right?
Yes, he was.
And it was kind of a crazy moment. He first of all, at the end, you know how they, at the end, they all come out and mm-hmm. the band sort of plays that walk-off music and everybody just thanks everybody and moves along. Kanye asked, because he had to step in at the last minute for Ariana Grande, he asked if he could do a song at the end. And they were like, yeah, you're Kanye. He's got a new album out. There's some really cool stuff on the new album. If you're a music fan and you're a music fan of Kanye's, you're going to really like the music. But he's stepping on his own music with this the rantiness of what he's doing. And if he wants to be for Trump, that's fine. But make sense when you're doing it. It's so much easier when you have a point.
You see, they laughing at me. You heard them, they scream at me. They bully me. They bullied me backstage. They said, don't go out there with that hat on. They bullied me backstage. They bullied me. And then they say, I'm in a sunken place. You want to see the sunken place? Okay, I'm going to listen to y'all now. I'm going to put my Superman cape on. Because this means you can't tell me what to do. Follow your heart and stop following your mind. That's how we're controlled. That's how we're programmed.
He was wearing the Make America Great hat, and mm-hmm. many told him to take it off.
Now, everybody at Saturday Night Live says he was walking up and down the halls all last week asking people, including the interns, should I wear the hat? Should I wear the hat? Should I wear the hat? Then he comes out, and they were showing, NBC was pushing out Instagram photos of him wearing the hat all week. They were not bullying him. They were letting him do whatever he wanted to do. So he comes out and says he's being bullied. Then he goes off into something about a cape and a this and a that, and it's all over the place.
Well, that's Kanye for you.
Right? And you're like, and then he's on the, and then he says he's redesigned the hat. I mean, the whole, it's crazy. It's well, crazy. You know what? Last week was he, or 2 weeks ago, he was in Chicago. He was underneath the Lake Street Owl, wandering around.
Doing videos, video, and posting them.
Right, about Drake and about
his wife and maybe her getting disrespected. And it was in a song.
Crazy stuff. And it's like, and he's like wandering around underneath the Lake Street Owl, ranting. I'm like, we see that every day, right? People walking around down there ranting.
Kanye.
Yes, not usually.
No.
But it was, in this case, it's Kanye's like, Kanye could, I mean, I don't know.
Well, now he's setting up a meeting between Donald Trump and Colin Kaepernick because he thinks that needs to happen. So he's on that.
He also wants to get rid of the 13th Amendment. Now,
when did abolish slavery?
He would like to bring slavery back? I don't know. What is he trying to do? Make slavery great again?
Unclear.
Should that be his new hat? I mean, what? I don't get what he's doing. What, we have other audio of him? You know, save it. We'll play some of the other audio of Kanye coming up. And we'll finally, let's get to this.
Number one.
Well, Saturday Live had a take. I do have to play this because it was quite a moment. Quite a moment. It was the Kavanaugh hearings redone. The only problem with this is that it was, in most cases, it was the exact same words that were from the Kavanaugh hearing. How about,
I'm here tonight because of a sham, a political con job orchestrated by the Clintons and George Soros and Kathy Griffin and Mr. Ronan Sinatra. Now, I am usually an optimist. I'm a keg is half full kind of guy.
Those words were not the actual words.
That wasn't
the rest of it were
for
the
impact.
Yeah, but they were. But it was very funny. And there was Matt Damon popping up. They've understood the idea of the viral here. They're pretty good with the viral.
Figured something out.
All right.
It was good.
Let's close this thing up.
The top five at five.
All right, big final hour and some change here on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. We've got Keith Thompson joining us after 6 o'clock. Keith Thompson is the brother-in-law of Jason Van Dyke. And yeah. Jason Van Dyke, the police officer here on trial for murder. These are tomorrow may be the last day of testimony in the case. We'll see if Jason Van Dyke takes the stand himself.
That's the big question.
That'll be a big question for tomorrow. But in this case, a lot has been said about Jason Van Dyke's racism, but Keith is his brother-in-law and is African-American and wants to talk to that issue. So
he has
stay
maintained
tuned for that.
His silence pretty much up in, at Jason's request, he says,
right
up until this point.
He's talking to us tonight at 6 o'clock, so we will stay tuned for that. Gretchen Carlson is joining us right now. Be Fierce is the book that she wrote, was it earlier this year, late last year? Gretchen, that very important. You are one of the seminal figures in the Me Too movement. Obviously, a former Fox, a CBS and a Fox anchor, and you were very open about your experiences at Fox with management there. And then you wrote the book, Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back, which is now in paperback. And there's new chapters, too, that are a part of this. This is an ever-evolving story, right?
Right. Well, thank you so much for having me back. Be Fierce came out last fall, and it was 2 weeks. The publication was 2 weeks before the Harvey Weinstein revelations came out. And so when the paperback came out just last week, we decided to add another chapter because obviously so much had changed since I had submitted the first book. As we continue to see that we're in this cultural revolution right now with more and more women and men, for that matter, feeling empowered to speak up about what's happened in their lives.
There's no question that's happening. You saw the Chicago Rape Crisis Hotline saw a 200% surge during the Kavanaugh hearings week, day, and in days before and after as well. And that's nationally, too, saw that many more people coming forward to report it. You must look at that as a good thing when you hear that people are feeling comfortable. How do you process that?
Well, I know that to be true because, after my story happened 2+ years ago against Fox News now, I felt completely alone. And I think that that's predominantly how people feel when they're victimized in this way. But what I soon found out was that I wasn't, because I started hearing from dozens first, then hundreds, then thousands of other women across our country who had similar experiences. And they had either never spoken about it, because you see what happens when you do come forward, or they did and they were promptly, you know, blacklisted, demoted, and fired from their jobs. And so I realized very soon that I wasn't alone. There were just all these silent women across the country and the world who had never been given a voice. And, you know, so I think what we're seeing with the Kavanaugh hearing is obviously politics are involved, unfortunately, but we're seeing the idea that even the Me Too movement now is coming to Washington in a big way.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me as a guy, right? And when this started, Me Too changed things, because the Anita Hill hearings, mm-hmm. you know, there was still a, well, little lady, nice of you to come by here, the United States Senate, right? There was still a lot of that kind of a deal, like patting around the head and there was a pubic hair on your Coke can, okay, mm-hmm. whatever. She wasn't taken particularly seriously. And when you watch that testimony now, in the aftermath of everything, has a totally different, but her testimony has a totally different impact now than it did when we first saw it 27 years ago. What you're seeing here now is...
But the way she was treated doesn't hold up well.
I want to
be clear about that.
And the idea that a lot of those same senators are still on the Judiciary Committee and, you know, sitting there at that, if they're, sorry, I'm for term limits, you know, the idea that the same people would be there all the years later, that's why they brought in the prosecutor to ask the questions.
Yeah, right. So however you want to look at that, I want to just take that out of the politics of this and just talk about the impact that these stories have and how differently they're being taken, because now you do have, when over the last year, whether it was, you know, through the some of the Trump stuff or any of the other pieces that came out here of bad behavior in the workplace over the last year with Weinstein and all the rest, how many women now feel safe in talking about their experiences that they just kind of had to sit on, not just kind of, did sit on from the times that they happened? And some of the stories were, you know, smaller than others. You know, it was anything from feeling incredibly uncomfortable in a moment to literally being date raped, right? You've got
exactly.
the spectrum here. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. do you think now that the Kavanaugh moment, because we look at this, people go, oh, what's the big deal? It was back then. It speaks to how people actually behave,
and it speaks to how people trivialize what can actually and has happened to thousands and millions of women across this world. You know, the idea that because it happened 36 years ago potentially that it doesn't matter. I mean, listen, I was sexually assaulted twice when I was 23 years old in the span of just a couple of weeks of one another, the incidents, and I never told anyone for 25 years until I wrote my first book 3 years ago.
And this is two separate people, right? This is
two separate people, high-ranking people, because women look at themselves in the mirror and they think, oh, I must have done something, you know, or somehow we internalize the blame because we see what society does to us when, in fact, we do speak up. Now, I do want to give a caveat to that now, in that much has changed since my latest story broke 2 years ago. You know, women are actually now, you know, they're at least put on some sort of a platform of being believed, right? I mean, that was not the case before my story. And also, you're seeing consequences. You know, I think one of the most amazing things about my story that empowered other people was that there were swift consequences. And I think what it did was it gave a lot of other victims out there the feeling that, wow, if that story had consequences, maybe if I come forward, I'll get a fair shake too. And so I think we've seen a huge shift in that. And, you know, listen, we still have tons of work to do.
Yeah.
Companies really need to do a lot of introspection, because that's where the buck stops, is how do you actually handle this within the confines of the workplace structure?
And can you do an internal investigation, which we've seen some companies do, and does that really produce the results that appear fair?
Exactly.
And
great
really
point.
You know, expose the people who should be exposed. I want to ask you about another thing you mentioned, Gretchen. You said the politics involved in this one. And I think it is very difficult to separate the politics in this Kavanaugh situation. And I've heard from friends who say, I don't want to believe that he assaulted her because I don't want Roe v. Wade to be overturned, or because I don't agree with his conservative, or the opposite. It feels as if in this case, there's sort of that lens with which we look at both of these human beings. And I don't know what that does for the movement.
I know, and it's unfortunate. I've said from the beginning, and ever more so after I've been walking the halls of Capitol Hill to try and get my bill passed, that sexual harassment and assault is apolitical. When somebody decides that they want to harass you or assault you, they don't ask you what political party you're in first. And this is why we should all care about this issue, and it's why it's so unfortunate that members of Congress right now are saying, well, I'm going to vote one way or another before I even have all the evidence. That is sad to me, because you can't just pick and choose what people you want to believe based on whether or not you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent. We're never going to go anywhere in succeeding with finding the truth about anything, for that matter.
Right.
And I think Senator Jeff Flake really, you know, something really stuck out in my mind in the interview he did last night on 60 Minutes, which was, he was asked, if you were not, you know, if you were still running for re-election, would you have ever done what you did? And he said no. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is what's sad about the state that we find ourselves in this country today, is that we're so divisive, and we don't cross party lines anymore. And that's sad, especially on an issue like this, because it is apolitical.
That, what Jeff Flake said last night, is one of the most consequential and haunting statements by a politician this year, or maybe in this era. Which is that it's basically American democracy as we understand it is over, and we have to recalibrate. It was shocking. Shocking.
It was.
Gretchen, thank you very much. I know you got to run. Be Fierce is the book. It's now in paperback. And thank you for what you've done.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Gretchen Carlson.
Thanks, Gretchen.
All right, let's talk to Judy Pollack about what's happening in the WGN newsroom.
A shark attack in California.
Brocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, get a pair of tickets, that super sweet for the Blackhawks home opener. Stay close for that.
Very nice.
It's going to be something. It's going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. All right. Going on in Chicago the last couple of weeks has been the trial of Jason Van Dyke. Jason Van Dyke, as you know, is a police officer, shot and killed Laquan McDonald. It's a number of years ago now.
Yeah.
But it is now coming to a murder trial against a Chicago police officer, and we've seen a lot of the testimony here so far has been about you know the actions of that night. But one of the questions that is lingering outside the trial more than is inside the trial right now is state of mind. And you hear protesters saying that, and protest leaders outwardly stating that they think that Jason Van Dyke, they don't know him, but they think he is a racist cop who woke up that morning intent on killing a black kid.
Yep.
And I think there are a lot of other people, including myself in this town, who think that that's an unfair charge, because if you don't know him, how would you know that? And when you think about what a police officer does and the kind of situations they find themselves in day in and day out, if he were intended to be the intention were him to be a racist cop, because there hasn't been anything in the trial that has significantly made that point, that he's a racist and that he's a bad guy. And one of the things that his wife, right before the trial started, you recall that Jason and his wife both did interviews, but they talked about the fact that he's not. I mean, at home, he's the opposite of that. And as a matter of fact, his brother-in-law is an African-American, Keith Thompson. Keith Thompson joins us right now. And we appreciate your time, sir. I know that these are trying circumstances for the entire family, and people don't want to be necessarily public figures here. But this is, your brother-in-law is on trial, literally fighting for the rest of his life here to stay out of prison. Right. And let's just go back to that initial charge that, you know, he's a racist cop. How long have you known him, and what is your opinion of him?
I've known Jason easily 12, 13 years. In my opinion, he's a stand-up guy. I mean, he's a great father figure. He's a great family figure. He's a great friend. And he's like a brother to me. So it's hard to see all the negativity and everything on social media. Blasting that this is racially motivated. And like you said, he woke up with the intent that morning to go do this. It was, you know, pre-planned. So, you know, it's hard to deal with, but, you know, it's what's out there right now. So we're just trying to show that's not the case at all.
Keith, you're married to, what, his wife's sister? Is that right?
Correct. Yes,
so, and you've known him for years, as you say, and you see how he's being represented. In fact, you've even seen activists today say we should shut down the city, we should not go to any sort of businesses and send a message if he walks out of there today. How do you guys as a family feel when you hear that kind of reaction about justice taking its course and you know, the way you perceive what's going on here?
I don't really listen to the radio or watch the TV or anything like that right now. It's more about focusing on the family. But yeah, all I can say is, like, you know, it's not what it seems. It's just nothing that has to deal with race. He went to work that day and did his job. And it wasn't anything racially motivated towards that. So it's just hard to hear. We deal with it as we can, you know, as a family, try to group together and everything. But, you know, it is what it is right now. We're just trying to make it through.
In the aftermath of this, whether it was the days or weeks, you know, or the holidays in the aftermath, because this did happen in the fall, yeah. Right? So this incident initially. And your interaction with him, what was that like? I mean, I know police officers who were involved in fatal shootings, it changes them. I mean, there's no question about it. Did you see that change in him?
Yeah. I made him quiet for a while. It was, you know, hard for him to open up and talk. He secluded himself a little bit, you know, took some time to himself pretty much. But I mean, it's like I said, over time, he came out, you know, we like bonded again, like it's so once he was ready to come out and not be public, but, you know, at least be out and about instead of, you know, hidden away. So, I mean, it changed him. It's, you know, made him, he's a more quieter person right now. He's going through a lot. But he's still the same Jason as far as when we have our family gatherings and our get-togethers. Mm-hmm. He's still the same person as far as that goes. But yeah, it's changed him, obviously.
Yeah. How about members of your own family, on your side of the family? How are they reacting to all this?
They really haven't given me much of a reaction. They support, you know, me and the side of what we're doing, and, you know, hope that everything works out and everything works out and gets a fair trial.
Have you guys been worried about your safety? I know you see both Jason Van Dyke and his wife walking in with the bulletproof vests. Has it affected you guys? Have you been impacted by this? Or because you're taking a kind of a lower profile about this, maybe it hasn't. I don't know.
It does, because we can't really go out as social as we used to. Everything we do or the events we do have are private, behind doors. You know, it's just family. It's very, very tight. Family and really close friends, so which are very few. So, I mean, we don't get to go out and be as social as we used to. So it does change in that matter. But personally, I still don't go out as much, just because, you know, related to the incident and just in case, because you never know nowadays. So it does affect how much we do public things, think publicly as well. So it's just another thing to think about before you go out the house.
Yeah. And obviously there's a lot of concern if the jury doesn't come back and convict your brother-in-law of first-degree murder here. There are activists who are, you know, even Jesse Jackson Sr., was, you know, out talking about, he's upset about the racial makeup of the jury and already forecasting sort of doom for the first-degree murder charge. And then there's activists saying that, like as Anna said, they're going to shut down the city, they're going to boycott, they're going to do this. There may be civil action. Is there something you'd like to say as an African-American to the African-American community here about whatever happens?
Yeah, I would say let the jury decide, you know, let them do their job they've been appointed to do. And whatever the outcome is, you know, accept it as we all have to. You know, we can't change that. But to go out and riot or do anything to the city of Chicago because of an incident like this, it's unfair to everybody. You know, it doesn't do anything for us as a whole. It just breaks us down. So there's no positivity in that at all.
And obviously, you know, you've decided to come forward here in the last few days and stand up for your brother-in-law. What would you like us to know? What would you like us to take away about Jason Van Dyke?
Just that he's your average stand-up guy. You know, he does everything that he can to support his family, and you know, he's a big jokester. You know, we have great times together. He's not who they're putting him out to be. He's not this negative person that just goes out and, you know, goes on a killing spree or whatever they want to say. You know, there's. He's a great guy. He takes care of his family. He's great with his friends. You know, he's just the guy that you want to be around. There's nothing that would make you think that anything that happened was racially motivated, coming from my point of view.
All right. Keith, I know this is hard for you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And
I appreciate you.
Thank you, sir.
And thanks, Keith.
We pray not only for this city, for the families, everybody involved here,
absolutely.
Right? The McDonald family, obviously, for the loss of their son and their nephew, mm-hmm. grandson, but also for the Van Dyke family, because these two lives crossed and intersected in this really bad moment. It was a bad moment in the life of Laquan McDonald, right? When, you know, that night running up
sure.
to that was a very bad moment. And he clearly, as it has been in evidence here, he had a very tough and troubled life.
Mm-hmm.
There is
no question
about it. And there's no question that you wouldn't wish his struggles on anybody.
No.
And he found himself, you know, that night with a knife doing things that, you know, you just hope that that you don't want to see anybody in your family doing, you don't want to see anybody in the city doing. And yet he found himself in that, and then, found himself then confronted by Chicago police and basically in the presence of Chicago police for a number of minutes, and refusing to stop and refusing to drop his knife and refusing to and for many reasons too. I mean, he may not have been in his right mind. There's certainly an ample amount of evidence to show, forensic evidence that shows that you know, he was not fully in control of his faculties that night, because he was chemically otherwise distracted, right? And
well, as much as we feel for both of those individuals and their families, and you're totally right, Ro, it's a tough moment in time for our city as well, because of the way this whole thing was handled that had nothing to do with Jason Van Dyke or Laquan McDonald, because of the way the facts were relayed from that scene to us, because of the video being held and this whole system, it created some distrust, and
right.
it created a lot more scrutiny, and it created dissatisfaction with our government and the way the system handled this particular instance. And so it becomes such a meaningful case that's larger than these two individuals.
Right. But the criminal justice system isn't about those bigger issues. The bigger issues do need to be confronted. And they have in the aftermath to some degree. Because if you look at all the things that went wrong there that night on behalf of the city, I mean, you have a distressed young man with a knife, menacing people, menacing the guy at the car yard with the knife, and then stabbing a police vehicle's tire, and then trying to stab the window, obviously unsuccessfully, with a 3-inch knife. But then approaching the police officers. When you see the reenactment video and you see the forensic evidence, it shows that he was 36 feet away, and then within a matter of seconds, he was 13 feet.
Yeah.
Away from those two officers as he was approaching them. That is, and you look at the training, the outcome would be predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And 16 shots, certainly, you know, that's the number that gets everybody. You understand why the city, you can understand the motivation of people in the city to go, hey, we can't let this thing out. It's not the right thing not to let it out. That's the problem, is that Jesse Jackson Sr. today made the point that Chicago, I don't have this factually true. I'm just going to go with his assessment of it. I don't have the facts in front of me,
mm-hmm.
but he claims that Chicago leads the nation in police shootings, fatal shootings in the last 10 years. So let's just assume for the moment that he's right about that. That is a problem. And one of the reasons that has happened is that they did not have tasers issued to as many officers as they should have. There are training issues. There's also community issues. And there is a resistance to authority moments that happen when police officers have their weapons drawn. It is an unfair, it may seem unfair to the individual at the time, to the citizen at the time, when police are telling you to stop and, you know, get down on the ground or drop your weapon or whatever that happens to be. But they have the authority to use lethal force.
Yeah. And in fact, one of the remaining two witnesses left for the defense is a person who's going to speak just to that issue, someone who deals with training around police use of force and talks about how when you use it and when there's absolutely no choice is when you use it. And once the decision has been made, be sure the force is as deadly as possible, and has written on the subject before. That person is going to take the stand likely tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that's, and that's what they're saying about it. I'm not sure that's the make sure that force is as deadly as possible is really the protocol here. To stop the threat, neutralize the threat is the way that is that I've always heard it expressed, is that you must stop the threat. And the idea that you drop somebody, you disarm them, you know, if you're going to use a gun to stop them and disarm them, then, you know, it isn't about killing that person as much as is stopping the threat, and then hopefully they survive that. And there is a big question here about whether or not police, you know, rendered enough aid at the time to Laquan right. McDonald. And then there's testimony that says that he would have died within 5 minutes regardless, based on the second bullet, what they're calling bullet number two here, that penetrated him. That would have been a deadly.
He said even if you had a team of surgeons as part of the testimony standing there at the scene, it's unlikely that we would have had a shot at saving him.
Right. So this is there's a lot of you can see both sides of this argument here. Mm-hmm. But the argument about the police department not having enough tasers and waiting on the taser car and you know, what did Jason Van Dyke act imprudently? Did he act violently toward Laquan McDonald by shooting him 16 times? All those questions are the questions the jury has to wrestle with here. But at the end of this whole moment, we have to stop and think that the Chicago Police Department is not what is on trial here, or police procedure is not what's on trial. What's on trial is Jason Van Dyke. It's an individual. And whether or not he broke the law, we can have the grander arguments about police training and equipment and all the rest of that, because those are all legitimate answers to this. And it, potentially solutions, would hope. But this is, you know, to make this about the racial context of Chicago is unfair, because there doesn't seem to be any indication of that here.
Right.
All right. That's all I have to say about this at this moment. Judy Pilak is going to tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom.
A Rogers Park man shot to death after walking his dogs.
Oh, big deal. I got to talk to Kevin about this, because we made him come back here, rush back here after the Cubs game to talk to OB. Who, I've never heard Ed Obradovich so happy about anything as I heard him today about the Bears' performance yesterday. So that's all good. I feel good about that.
Didn't pound the table once.
Yeah, not once. We were exalting. But let's talk baseball here for a second. Mm-hmm. So Cubs lose. Cubs lose today. So they lose. They do not clinch. They do not win the National League Central. Now, that's the first time in three seasons that they have not. Mm-hmm.
If they won, they would have won the Central and clinched home field for the entire postseason.
Yes.
Oh, man.
This is a big, that was a big deal.
That was them not winning today.
So now they got to take on the Colorado Rockies, who just lost to the Dodgers in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And they come here for the one game. But then if the Cubs do succeed, they go back to Milwaukee home field advantage.
Right.
Right?
Right. So here's Colorado loses the NL. It was the same situation like we talked about earlier. Two tiebreakers today. You don't see that very often. Right. Almost never.
Yeah.
Cubs and the Brewers going for the tiebreaker. Rockies and Dodgers. So Rockies lose. They'll have a flight here tonight, and then they'll meet tomorrow after 7 at Wrigley. John Lester is going to go for the Cubs. Is there anybody else you would rather have on the mound than John Lester, who's pitched in every big game imaginable?
No, they need him. It's unfortunate, because they could really use him. Now, if they use him tomorrow night,
it'll be Hendricks Thursday.
Right, it would be right
in Milwaukee.
Get there.
Yes.
So, but he would be available for Sunday. Lester would.
Yes,
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Was it be Sunday, Monday? What is it going to
so
be?
It's Thursday,
Friday,
Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think is how it all played out. So, Cole Hamels will be available out of the bullpen. Just about all the arms in the bullpen will be available. Here's the thing:
it's a best of five series, right?
Best of five in the NLDS.
In the NLDS.
Tomorrow night, it's, you know, winner, you're done.
Right.
Tomorrow, wait, say that again.
Tomorrow's just one game. Winner, if you win, you move on. You lose, your season's over.
Okay, I'm a little nervous about that.
Yeah, it should be a little bit of some intensity at Wrigley Field. The problem is the offense right now. It goes hot and cold. They had just three hits today and one run, and that came on Anthony Rizzo's solo homer. The pitching was good. Jose Quintana was good today. The bullpen gave up two runs in the eighth, and the bullpen's been shaky.
Yes, I want to just say it was 1-1. It was 1-1. Quintana gave up a run early, and then Rizzo came back. Dinger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dinger.
No big deal.
Big deal. And then... I'm watching this on my app on my phone, walking down the street like a total dope, mm-hmm. right? And this says fall in a manhole cover or get robbed. It's the two things it says in Chicago
or
when you're walking down the street.
Traffic,
right? Or
maybe both.
There are all four things that could possibly happen to you. And so I'm watching this, and as soon as they brought the relief in the eighth inning, I'm like, oh no, oh no.
Yeah.
And it was a leadoff single, then I think it was another single, right?
Mm-hmm.
So guys,
it was a single and then a double.
A double, so second and third.
Single, Domingo's Santana doubled.
Nobody out, men on second and third, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody out. And I'm like, oh, this is just, now what are we going to do? It's just, I have no sense of hope in the relief situation here with the Cubs. Great starters, but obviously you got so many injuries. What do you do?
Right. Well, here's the thing about the bullpen. I actually think you could even make an argument. The bullpen as a whole this season is the MVP of the team. There was this rough stretch for the starting pitchers who have been great down the final month.
Talking
here.
About the closing.
Yes.
The eighth and ninth inning.
Right. Here's the problem right now. You have the Cubs relievers who pitch to contact. You don't have the Aroldis Chapmans. You don't have the Wade Davises of the past couple of years. You don't have Brandon Morrow, who is your closer, who's done for the season. And we still don't know what the deal is with Pedro Strop, who was filling in for Morrow, who was injured. Strop, Madden wouldn't say whether or not he's going to be available tomorrow and even moving forward if they do make it to the NLDS. So that's the problem.
Is his hat available? So they put somebody else out there in his hat and try to confuse them?
Who is available? Who do we have?
Well, Jesse Chavez has been lights out. He hasn't given up a run since September 5th. Steve Cechek's been pretty good, although he gave up some hits. He wasn't charged with the runs today. They don't have a whole bunch in the bullpen, I think, that you trust. Carl Edwards, when he's throwing strikes, is outstanding. But the problem is he'll go out there and throw four straight balls and walk a guy. Mm-hmm. And he'll get himself in his trouble. So you're going to see Madden go to Jesse Chavez. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Cole Hamels out of the bullpen tomorrow. Madden made a point today, says Hamels is going to be available out of the bullpen.
I do not feel happy about the relief situation. I'm sorry.
You shouldn't.
I
don't think you should.
I just don't.
Yeah.
And the bats have been hot and cold all year.
Hot and cold all year. The bullpen, I totally understand the uneasiness there because you don't have your best relief pitcher in Brandon Morrow. In the past 2 years, we saw Wade Davis, how good he was in the postseason. And then, of course, 2 years ago with Aroldis Chapman.
Okay, it's the postseason now, gentlemen.
Postseason.
I just want to point this out.
Yes.
It is now officially the postseason.
Yes.
Today was kind of the postseason, too. Maybe they didn't think it was, but it was the postseason today. And now tomorrow, it is time to... This is it. It's one and done. Remember, was it four
terrible.
Seasons ago, right? Was it the
2015 when they beat the Pirates? They got that gem from Jake Arrieta.
Right.
There was some tension between the Cubs and Pirates. They went on. Then they beat the Cardinals, and then they lost to the Mets in the NLCS.
Right. So the NLCS, see, this would be amazing. If they made the NLCS again this year, such a record for the Cubs in terms of a number
four
of continuous
years.
Appearances in the championship, mm-hmm. and the NLCS is relatively, you know, in the history of baseball, it's a relatively new concept, but this is a big deal.
So all they have to do is win tomorrow.
They win tomorrow, then they're in, then they're up in Milwaukee Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. Thursday, Friday, then they come here Sunday, Monday, and then back in Milwaukee on Tuesday or Wednesday? Is that how it's going to go?
Yeah, so it'll be Thursday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday back at Wrigley, and then game five would be Wednesday.
All right, Wednesday back at Wrigley.
All right, let's just think about tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Big game. Cubs-Rockies.
Big deal!
It's a big deal. It is a huge deal.
Right.
To me, today was it was just intense there.
Andrea,
the fans were hanging on every pitch, so it's going
to
be fun.
Andrea, what's going on in the newsroom?
Well,
I'm too nervous to talk.
We're going
to
feature a guest that you just had on within the past hour, Jason Van Dyke's brother-in-law, and what he has to say about Van Dyke. It's coming up at 6.
All right.
7.
7.
Sorry.
6.
Sorry, so
Mountain Time. We're already thinking about Denver. All right. Violetta, what do you got in the WGN Traffic Center? Patty Vasquez is here.
Hi, Patty. We've missed seeing you during the baseball season. And
I
everything.
Know. It's so dark now, though. I used to come
I
in here
know.
And the daylight was still shining, but no, it's all dark. Out.
I know. This Jerry. Is that moment where it's dark before 7.
Yeah, how did this seems sudden.
It and then, it's get, then it gets really sudden. Like in a couple weeks, it'll be dark before 6.
No.
Oh, gee.
And then
I'm not ready for
and
that.
Then you get, and then, you, and then they do that dreaded time change, and it's like at 3:30 it starts to get dark. You're like, oh, no! No!
No daylight. Have you ever been anywhere where there's just no daylight for a while? I was someplace where the sun wouldn't go down. I was in Flin Flon, Canada.
Manitoba?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
And it was like daylight until midnight. And then it was sunshine again at like 4 in the morning. It was very strange.
Flin Flon.
Flin Flon. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but here it will be dark.
Were you playing hockey? What were you doing in Flin Flon?
That's the only thing they do up there. Stand-up comedy and hockey.
I was doing stand-up comedy. I went to play.
Oh, strip clubs. They have strip clubs.
No. That's not what I was there for, but I was doing
I'm not saying you were, but there's three things that are there. Strip clubs, hockey,
and comedy. Yes, they need to laugh.
Yeah.
They would never laugh out loud. They were very silent during the show.
Very polite.
And then come up to me afterwards and tell me how hysterical I was. And I asked why they didn't laugh out loud, and they said because they didn't want to interrupt us.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm sorry.
Beyond polite.
So sorry.
It's true.
I know. That's not how it works.
Yeah,
You're freaking
me out. Yeah, so after that point, Canada, the metropolitan areas of Canada are a little more, you know, like,
yes.
they know to laughter and comedy show, but they're so nice.
Yes.
Somebody once sneezed in public and no one said, God bless you, and that's the biggest crime that ever happened in Flin Flon, Manitoba.
They're still talking about it. Yeah, Calgary was much better. Medicine Hat was okay, too.
Medicine Hat.
Oh, my God.
What a town that is.
A great town.
Yes. Yeah. Regina. Been to Regina.
Yes.
Oh, be
Saskatoon.
Melvina and Lunt. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. What else you got here?
Actually, I'm so excited because Tim Carey and Jim Miller from Hawthorne Racetrack are coming in today.
Oh.
And I spent a lot of my childhood at that racetrack as well as Maywood and Arlington Heights. So I did. My dad, that's how I learned math was how to like, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. How to handicap, but you know, is he a good mutter? How much weight is in the saddle? You know, all kinds of. I usually bet on horses with if I thought they were in a good mood, I would go down to the paddock and whichever one seemed like it was in a better mood.
Right.
A little jaunty.
Yes. See?
Yeah.
A little bounce in a step. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes they turn a foot when they're walking around the little paddock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or back in the day, you decided which one was shot up. And then you were like, okay, I'm going to take that one. Yeah.
My dad was 5'3", and he loved going down to the paddock and watch jockeys mount because he'd be like, hey, you're just a little fella.
Hey, shorty.
The short athletes. Exactly. So we've got that. And we also have Motivational Monday, our friend Scott Smith from Our Man in Chicago. A lot of great stuff tonight. So
we're having
a lot of fun. Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful evening. You know you want to be listening.